Welcome to ASEAN Insights, Understanding Southeast Asia, the premier podcast that examines current dynamics defining the region. Brought to you by the Economic Research Institute for ASEAN and East Asia, each episode we will talk with thought leaders who are shaping the future of the region through research, policy, activism, or business. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Lydia Reddy, Special Advisor to the President of IRIA on U.S.-ASEAN Affairs and Director of Communication, the host of today's podcast. Today, it's my great pleasure to sit down with Professor Akiko Yamanaka, Special Advisor to the President of IRIA, former Vice Minister for Foreign Affairs and Special Ambassador for Peacebuilding, Japan. She's also been a fellow at Cambridge University and at the think tank CSIS in Washington, D.C., as well as a visiting researcher at Oxford University and a visiting professor at the Graduate School of Hokkaido University, as well as at the United Nations University. So welcome, Yamanaka-san, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Lydia, for your kind introduction.
So you have written extensively about preventative diplomacy and human security, issues that are at the forefront of global discourse as we witness areas of conflict erupting across multiple geographies, Ukraine, and then closer to home in Myanmar, for example. So let me ask a definitional question first. What is human security and how is it related to preventative diplomacy?
Human security is the idea that the people have the right to live in freedom and dignity, free from poverty and despair, with an equal opportunity to enjoy all their lives and fully develop their human potential. I believe that the combination of human security as a framework and preventive diplomacy as the activities necessary to realize this idea should be reintroduced systematically at the United Nations. Let me introduce human security and preventive diplomacy very briefly. Security will be human priorities: equality, poverty, education, health, peace, employment, equal rights for women, political freedom, and social justice. On the agenda of development strategies, he really put focus on economic, food, health, environmental, personal, community, and political security. Then how we can realize the concept of human security? We should go back to the United Nations traditional activities, preventive diplomacy. Explain very briefly about four steps of preventive diplomacy for war and conflict. One, preventing conflict from breaking out. Two, preventing conflict from expanding. Three, promoting ceasefires and stop the conflict to enable recovery. And fourth, preventive the resumption of hostilities. As you know, more than 40% of the current conflicts in the world are recurring. The preventive diplomacy can be applied for natural disasters as well as pandemic like COVID-19 as well. I will talk about it later.
So let me ask you a question related to the headlines. What should leaders be doing right now to address the conflicts?
I think that I would like to say common interests. Common interest, it means that we have national interest and international interest. And common interest is the same feeling with the international interest. So when we look at the world at this moment, really most developed country nation would like to establish mutual rules and ally with the common interests. However, if on the global stage, only a strong wins the weaker on the bilateral negotiation, no one else in this complicated and interconnected world will survive. And I think that even the winner will suffer a backlash as common interests reassert themselves in a boomerang effect. The urgent need to spread the concept of protection, common interests, to be leader to the leaders who do not yet realize its importance.
Last year, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres made a very pointed remark about the lack of emphasis on peace building and prevention of conflict when he said, "We have war correspondents, not peace correspondents." So what role does the UN play in addressing these issues?
I think it's really important because United Nations is the biggest and most powerful international organization that almost every nation state are a member. And of course, as you know, when it was started in just after the World War II, the number of the nations were more than 80. However, at this moment, it's 190 something. So there are many countries. So that's why I think that we have to really reconsider the function and also purpose of the United Nations. So I think that Secretary Guterres said refers to the peace building. It's very important. When we lead carefully, it says the Secretary General will work together with the Security Council to make the world peace. And I really feel if the Security Council doesn't work like this, then I think that we have to give the power. So I think that he can work together with the High Commissioner for Humanities and also High Commissioner for Refugees together, that as a United Nations Secretary, not just a kind of statement, but try to talk with the president of Russia and encourage him that he has to stop. So that's why I think that it is the timing for everybody to really make, to be honest, General Assembly should have more power than the Security Council. I really hope the Secretary General Guterres can take one action. And I would say some said no, but still most of the 140 nation states will support him.
Do you want to say anything about Myanmar and the United Nations, the role that the United Nations has played in Myanmar?
Well, I believe that the United Nations, especially the High Commissioner for Human Rights, should work on this matter, fully supported by the Secretary General and other nation states, because the High Commissioner for Human Rights is the former president of Chile. She has experienced to be restrained and tortured with her mother, and her father was tortured to die. But in order to do so, I believe the support and help from ASEAN nation states is essential, because if ASEAN nation states do not support her, it's very difficult. So that's why I think it's not just only United Nations, but United Nations should talk with ASEAN nation states.
So just a follow-up, how can the ASEAN member states support the UN in Myanmar? Are there concrete actions they could be taking?
I think, I'm sure, to be honest, it's very difficult because Myanmar is a part of ASEAN. So that's why ASEAN nation state cannot say, you should stop directly. But everybody think that it's not the right way to do. So that's why I think that the United Nations can take initial role so that ASEAN nation state can support it.
So, as you've said, central to the human security approach is the idea that people have the right to live in freedom and dignity, free from poverty and despair, and that they have equal opportunities to enjoy their rights and develop their human potential. So there's a lot of elements underpinning this approach. It's economics, it's health, it's environment, I guess it's politics. So in fact, one could argue that the pandemic has exposed the weaknesses of traditional security approach, and that human security should be the basis for how we develop policies that not only help us recover from the pandemic crisis, but help us to be prepared for future pandemics. So what areas do you think ASEAN or ASEAN member states need to address in order to maximize human security in the region? And if you have any examples?
I think that, of course, health security aims to guarantee a minimum protection from diseases and unhealthy lifestyles. In developing countries, the major causes of deaths traditionally were infectious and pandemic diseases. So that's why I think that I can introduce to the ASEAN nation states about the preventive diplomacy apply for the pandemic. Then again, four stages, and the stage one is infection disease control, means preventing asymptomatic spread. Two, infectious prevention through social measures. Three, eradication of new infections. And four, preventing the spread of recurring or new diseases. I think that these four stages is really helpful for the ASEAN nation state. And I think that health security should be challenged at the first stage because it's really depends on the country, but you can choose a way.
So ASEAN is really looking at opening borders between the countries, but when the pandemic hit, every single ASEAN country closed its borders just completely, and they stayed shut for a very, very long time. Would there be a way, do you think, for ASEAN countries to keep their borders open so that people could travel to where treatment was better?
So we have to take a balance between the of course, protection of the people from COVID, but we have to really keep our economy mobilized. Otherwise, it's really difficult. So this is one thing. The second thing is, if we can have the medicine, then it's much easier for everybody who can take medicine if you have caught by the COVID-19.
What you said also raises another issue that I was thinking about with the vaccines and the fact that so many countries didn't have access to vaccines originally. So again, this goes back to the health security and the role of the UN. How can health security and human security improve the vaccine situation for people around the world?
To be honest, WHO doesn't have so much power and so much, I would say, budget to really buy and spread. So that's why I think that we have to make a kind of mechanism beforehand or afterward of this COVID-19 is before the next pandemic, how we can share these vaccines or the medicine to the developing nation states, because developed nation states can buy by yourselves. But I think that this time Security Council would work, I hope. So to try to make mechanism.
Okay, so you're saying that this new mechanism to help with sharing the vaccine across to developing countries would actually be sort of housed or managed and under the Security Council, not WHO?
However, WHO doesn't really have so much power. So that's why Security Council should support WHO to try to make a mechanism.
So are there any good examples of national policies that incorporate human security? So I'm reminded of Bhutan's gross national happiness.
I think it's very, very wonderful case, and which I hope that introduced to the ASEAN nation states, because of course, in order to achieve human security, it takes time. And therefore, continuous efforts are needed. And if we remember the Bhutan case, actually it started in 1972. And at that time that the king, he said, gross national happiness is more important than gross domestic product. The concept implies sustainable development should take a holistic approach toward the nations of progress and give equal importance to non-economic aspects of well-being. First one is psychological well-being. Second one is health. Third one, education. Fourth one is so interesting. Fourth one is time use. And fifth one is cultural diversity and resilience. And the sixth one is good governance, of course. And then seventh one is community vitality. And eighth one is ecological diversity and resilience. And the ninth one is living standards. Economic security is not the new concept. It's really started in 1994. But in order to achieve the economic security, we need wider view and, of course, happiness of the people is the main goal. So I think this is wonderful.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Lastly, we haven't even touched upon many other key topics when it comes to human security. So we've got climate change, we've got the fourth industrial revolution, natural disasters in this region. So would you like to say anything about any of these?
I would like to just focus on the disaster prevention. And again, I would like to combine with the preventive diplomacy application for the natural disaster. Then the one is preparing for natural disasters before they happen. We cannot stop it. However, we can prepare because we have a history, what kind of natural disaster happened before, like 100 years before or 30 years before. I believe the education of the disaster prevention is very effective. And in Japan, every elementary school has this course. And I think that part of Indonesia, like Aceh, challenges this education, but not everywhere yet. So I think that this is very, very important. And I think at post-COVID-19 era, I believe that the new lifestyle will be introduced. In other words, more comfortable lifestyle, which fits to the lifestyle in Asia, especially in ASEAN nations. I think the human security and the preventive diplomacy is a kind of basic idea, but actual action should be really up to your own country and nation, but we can share the base philosophy and concept and work together or help one another. That and the United Nations role is more important, so we should really make the United Nations more function.
Well, Yamanaka-san, I wish that there were more leaders who had your outlook and perspective. And so it's a depth of knowledge and it's a positive outlook. It's very impressive. And I very much have enjoyed this conversation. And I want to end it on this positive note about working together. So thank you again for joining today, and look forward to seeing you next time.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Lydia-san, to really give me this opportunity to be able to share a humble thought. But still, I really would like to contribute more to the ASEAN nation states.
If you have any questions about the issues explored in this episode, email us at contactus@iria.org. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other streaming platforms so that you will be notified about future sessions.